Good morning, everybody. Sorry about a little bit of a delay. We had a technology crisis here at the Boca Raton Synagogue as our internet was down until about 30 seconds ago. So appreciate everyone sticking with us. And I apologize again for last week. Baruch Hashem, we are back and better than ever. I want to thank our sponsors for this week's class. The series is sponsored anonymously in memory of Teddy Kellen, Shimon Tuvia, Ben Dov, Yehuda Leib Chaim. Today's shiur is sponsored by Al Gordon in loving memory of his father, Baruch Ben Chaim, and uncle Baruch Yehuda Ben Shmuel, whose yurtzeits fell on the 29th day of Teves. We appreciate his sponsorship very much. And by Nadine and Jonah Rosenblatt for Besuros Tovos, a good and health for Judy Cutler, Yehudis Esther Bas Rezel. Our learning should be for an aliyah for the neshamas and for a refuah shleima. We thank everyone very, very much. You might be wondering what my background is. Well, I just got a call from my mom. She sent me pictures from Boston. That is a snowy, cold morning in Boston, Massachusetts. So in honor of those of you who are living up north, who are dealing with the cold, miserable, disgusting weather, you should be down here in Florida. But if you can't be down here in Florida, at least you'll get the warmth of our Torah here on Friday morning, Erev Shabbos, Parshas Bo. Here we go, three ideas in 30 minutes. The first idea comes from the beautiful Sefer Nahar Shalom from Avshalom Reuven Feinstein. Thank you to the individual who has sent me this beautiful set of Svarim. You might know, if you've been learning with me now for a few years, that I have a little thing with dogs. And when I say I have a little thing with dogs, it means I don't like them very much and they don't like me very much. But dogs come up in this week's parsha. I know we spoke about it a little bit last year, but I saw a new idea this year in Nahar Shalom, which I thought was a beautiful idea, and I think is very relevant to every single one of us. Of course, the pasuk tells us, "U'lechol b'nei Yisrael lo yecharatz kelev l'shono l'me'ish v'ad be'ima l'man teidun asher yafle Adonai ben Mitzrayim uvein Yisrael." Right, in all of Eretz Mitzrayim and all of the land, no dog barked, so that you shall know that Hashem will separate you from the Mitzrim. The pasuk tells us that on the night of Makas Bechoros, as the angel of death, as Hashem himself, I should say, was going through Mitzrayim and killing off the Bechoros, so the Torah tells us that the dogs didn't bark, and as a reward for that, so the Klal Yisrael has to feed their nevelos to them. The question is, the million-dollar question, why didn't the dogs bark? So there are various answers given, and again, you can listen to last year's shiur if you want a different suggestion for what we answered back then. But he quotes here, or Feinstein quotes here, a beautiful understanding, which I think is so relatable to every single one of us. Again, I'm not a dog guy, so I'm going to speculate, but I've been around enough dogs to know that the worst thing you can do to a dog is what? Well, first of all, run. That I know for sure. But the second worst thing you could do for a dog is be agitated. If you get animated, if you sound or look excited, so what's the dog going to do? So the dog is also going to get agitated and excited. It's going to either think you're playing and come chase you, or the dog is going to go into a little bit of a tizzy. So for example, if I did have a friend who had a dog, they would tell me that sometimes if it's, for example, a big thunder and lightning storm, so the dog doesn't handle that well and the dog goes crazy throughout the night because of the agitation caused by the thunder and lightning. So dogs don't do well with change. They don't do well when things are out of the ordinary. They don't do things well when things are excited or when things are animated. That's usually the case. Now, if that's the case, what would you have expected on the night of Makas Bechoros? As Hashem, right, Ani Velo Malach, Hashem is going through Mitzrayim and he's killing off the firstborn Mitzrim. What do you think the emotion was in Mitzrayim that night? So if you were in the Egyptian houses, chaos. Complete and utter chaos. People panicking. People trying to figure out exactly what's going on. People running to their neighbors' houses to see, is this happening to you? Is this happening to Chaim Yankel? Everyone's trying to figure out what's going. There is utter chaos. Let's say you'll say that in the Jewish homes, it was calm. No, it wasn't. Where do you think the Egyptians were going to hide? The Egyptians were going into the Jewish homes because they were trying to hide from the death and the destruction that was happening all around. Furthermore, what do you think the Egyptians were doing? Well, my guess is they were trying to convince the Jews to get out as quickly as humanly possible. And so there was an enormous amount of chaos in Mitzrayim that night. The Egyptians were in chaos. The Jewish homes were in chaos because the Egyptians were charging in, trying to convince them to leave, trying to convince them to end this madness. Everywhere you looked, there was complete and utter chaos. What would you have expected from the dogs? If I introduce this by saying that typically dogs become excited and animated when things change, dogs become animated and exciting when things are out of the ordinary, when there's a tension in the air. Well, was there any night in the history of mankind that there was more tension than that night in Mitzrayim? So what would you have expected the dogs to have done? Exactly that. The dogs would have expected them to be excited and animated because of the tension. And yet, that's exactly not what happens. Instead, the dogs sit there calmly. I want to read for you this quote from R. Feinstein, which I think is beautiful. He says, in all those interactions, the Egyptians were surely very tense. They blamed the Jews for the deaths of their family members. And so in conversing with Klal Yisrael, were surely agitated. Again, the Egyptians were agitated in their own homes. They were agitated when they were coming to the Jewish homes. Everyone was agitated. And their dogs would have picked up on this. Yet because the dogs sensed that Hashem had carried out the Makkah, they did not react as they normally would have in such a scenario, and instead were silent. Even though ordinarily the dogs should have been agitated and they should have been excited and animated in a not positive way. But because they sensed that it was Hashem who was in charge, so the dogs maintained this sense of calmness. Says R. Feinstein, it is ultimately the dogs then who bore witness with their abnormal behavior that Hashem had carried out the Makkah. It is in return for this that they receive all the nevelos of Klal Yisrael for all time. What a beautiful imagery. It's the dogs, specifically the least intelligent of the creatures, who we would have expected to be oblivious to everything that was going on in Egypt. They understood exactly what was happening. That even though everyone around them was tense, and even though everyone around them was chaotic and there was change and everything was out of the ordinary, what did the dogs sense? The dogs understood that it was Hashem who was in charge. And because they understood that it was Hashem who was in charge, that it was God himself who was carrying out the Makkah, so therefore they were calm. You see, it's kind of ironic that while we would have expected the dogs to act, well, dog-like, it's actually the dogs in Mitzrayim that hit the nail on the head. It's the dogs in Mitzrayim, according to R. Feinstein, that understand exactly what's going on. That when everyone else is running and everyone else is panicking and everyone else is chaotic and everyone else is tense, not the dogs. The dogs understand that it all comes from the Ribono Shel Olam. And I couldn't help but think, even though he doesn't take it in this direction, but I couldn't help but think that in a weird way the Torah is kind of communicating to us that we're all the dogs in this story. In other words, we all experience that dog-like experience at various parts of our lives. How many times in our lives do we, when we have to deal with change, when things are out of the ordinary, when we feel the tension from people around us, and what happens? So we become agitated, and we become animated, and we become excited, not in a positive way, but we get all frazzled, and we get all anxious. Because why? Because things are different. And the way things have always been is not the way things are now. And I'm nervous, and I'm anxious, and I'm excited, and I'm anticipating. And the message of the dogs is that the same way the dogs understood that even when there was chaos all around them, it was Me'eis HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that it was the hand of God influencing their lives. That's the lesson for us. Sometimes we act like the dogs. When there's change, when things are out of the ordinary, when we're going through a difficult time, when there's agitation all around us. So we want to act like dogs normally do, which is to get animated and excited and agitated and start barking and start going crazy. We do that all the time. When something happens in this world that we don't understand, when something happens in the world that is against our natural way of doing things and it throws us off our game, and it makes us that same sense of agitation. So the dogs come along and remind us that when you recognize that it all comes from Hashem, when you recognize and you put your faith in the Ribono Shel Olam, that even though there's chaos all around you, you recognize that this is the Ratzon of Hashem. So then, like the dogs, who sat back that night and instead of barking were able to accept, to let go, and to believe that Hashem was in charge. So that's the relationship that we have with this world. The dogs become the example for us. The same way that dogs would naturally become agitated, and yet they understood that it was God who was in charge, so too we in life, when we naturally want to become agitated, when we naturally want to feel anxious, when things are out of the ordinary, when there's change going on around us and there's chaos going on around us, learn the lesson of the dogs in Mitzrayim, who instead of barking, and instead of going crazy, and instead of reflecting that chaos, the dogs understood, as Rav Feinstein said, is ultimately the dogs who bore witness that Hashem had carried out the Makkah, that it's Hashem who's in charge. And if it's Hashem who's in charge, then there's nothing to worry about, and there's nothing to get agitated about, and there's nothing to reflect that chaos, but rather it's that recognition that ultimately Hashem is in charge. So that is my ode this morning to dogs, my yearly, I should say, ode this morning to dogs. Those who say, I don't like dogs, I'm now 2 years in a row of defending the dogs in Mitzrayim. Got to get something for that. And that is the most I will do for dogs for another year. That is idea number one. Idea number two comes from the plague of Choshech. Plague of Choshech we could talk about forever. Was it real darkness? Was it not real darkness? The famous comment of the Torah Tmima, where the Torah Tmima tells us that it wasn't that there was darkness in Mitzrayim, but rather that the individual Mitzrim had almost like a cataract, that on their eyes there was this almost like film that came over their eyes. It's a wild comment. If you can look up the Torah Tmima, I'll read a few right here. This is not the idea, but he says, if I could, right, whenever someone says, velule mistafina, which means like, if I wasn't afraid to say it, lahamsi davar chadash me'od, if I wasn't afraid to say something novel, I would have said, de'inyan ha'choshech haya lo ba'avir, rak be'inei ha'anashim. In other words, there was no darkness in Egypt. It was that the individuals had this film over their eyes, almost like this cataract over their eyes, which prevented them from seeing the light. Now, in and of itself, that's a beautiful imagery. It means that there's light all around them, but they just couldn't see it. What a powerful message for every single one of us. Right, oftentimes in life, we get frustrated and we get anxious and we get depressed because we don't see the blessings in our lives. The blessings are there. Sometimes we just don't have the eyes to see them. The Medrash says, how thick was that film over their eyes? Hayeka ove dinar. That it was the thickness of a dinar coin. It was money that was blinding them. Wow, what a beautiful imagery as well. What does it mean that it was money that was blinding the Egyptians? Why didn't they let the Jews go? What do they need this insanity for? The answer is that the Egyptians were trying so desperately to hold on to their money and their power and their wealth that they were blinded to the suffering of the Jews. They were blinded to the hand of Hashem. Happens to be that could have been idea number two in and of itself. Such a beautiful Torah Tmima. Really something to think about. Again, that notion that there's light all around, but I can't see it. We know we experience that in our lives, that there are miracles, there's goodness, there's positivity all around us, but sometimes we too feel like there's that film over our eyes. And in this case, says the Medrash, what's blocking their eyes? Ke'ove dinar. That it was the thickness of a dinar coin. Out of all the imageries, out of all the metaphors to have chosen, why a dinar coin? The answer is because, again, it's that wealth that was blinding them. That it was their desire to hold on to wealth and power that was blinding them to the suffering of the Jews, that was blinding them to the hand of Hashem in this world. Again, we can give a drasha about that right now. And we could talk about how the challenges of materialism and the challenges of power and the challenges of wealth that prevents us from seeing the hand of Hashem in our lives. But that's not what I wanted to talk about. What I want to talk about is a medrash. That's a rabbi move, by the way, for those who are unfamiliar with it. Rabbis give like 14 introductions and say, but none of that's what I want to talk about. That's a rabbi move. And then when they say, I'll close with this, which really means that there are four more ideas coming, but the rabbi senses that he's starting to lose the room. So here's the real idea I wanted to share, though. Says the pasuk, Vayei Moshe es yado al hashamayim, vayei choshech hafela. Right? Moshe sticks his hand, and there is this darkness. Asks the Medrash, Meheichan haya choshecho. Where did this darkness come from? This is the Medrash in Shmos Rabbah 14:2. Right? Meheichan haya choshecho. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nehemiah. It's two opinions. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mechoshech Shamala, that it's some heavenly darkness. Rabbi Nehemiah Omer Mechoshech Shel Gehenim, that this was the Choshech of Gehenim. It was the Choshech from hell. It was the darkness of hell. Okay, so they're arguing about, what are they really arguing about? Whenever you see two opinions in a medrash, you should always recognize that there's more that's going on there. So one says it's Mechoshech Shamala, and the other says it's Mechoshech Shel Gehenim. What are they arguing about? I saw a beautiful interpretation. You see, we know that there is a difference, and we've given drushes about this in the past, that there is a difference between loneliness and aloneness. Loneliness is a plague. Loneliness is one of the great plagues of our generation. We are a more connected generation than in the history of mankind, and yet there's more loneliness than ever before. As Rabbi Soloveitchik says, one may stand at Times Square where hundreds of people pass by every minute, and you can feel very lonely. We've all had those experiences. Going through a difficult time, you go to a party, you go to an event, and everyone's laughing and cleaning their glasses, and you feel alone you feel lonely in the room. So loneliness is one of the most profoundly painful human experiences. It makes you feel lost. It makes you feel isolated. It makes you feel misunderstood. Loneliness is a plague. That, I believe, is what the Medrash says, that it's the Choshech Shel Gehenim, that it's the darkness that plagues you, which is like hell. That is loneliness. But then we know that there's a different kind. And that's not loneliness, but rather that is alone. To be alone is not necessarily a curse. If you are an introvert, then to be alone can be the greatest blessing in the world. Some people re-energize and recharge specifically when they are alone, not when they are in the context of a large crowd. We know that one of the great challenges of our generation as well is developing that sense of aloneness, the ability to be alone without devices and without distractions and without people. Greatest example I give to this all the time is an elevator, right? You're sitting in an elevator, so you're always, just sit for a second. Have a thought. Finish a thought. Get to know yourself a little bit. But we live in a very distracted world. In a very distracted world, we are afraid to be alone with ourselves. And yet, we know from countless, countless, countless sources, both religious and secular, the benefits of being alone. How it energizes us. How it causes introspection. How it allows us to connect with our Creator. And so whereas loneliness can be the biggest curse, aloneness, certainly in our interconnected, chaotic world, aloneness can be the greatest bracha. That, I believe, is the machlokas between Rav Nehemiah and Rav Yehuda in the Medrash. Meheichan haya choshech ahu. What was this darkness? Was it a good? Is there good darkness? Is it bad darkness? So Rav Yehuda says it's choshech shamala. Rav Yehuda says there's a positive darkness. In other words, there's a positive sense of being alone when it causes introspection, when it allows you to think, when it allows you to connect with Hashem. That's Mechoshech Shamala. It's an elevated type of darkness because it contributes to me being alone, alone in a positive sense. But Rav Nehemiah comes along and says, Mechoshech Shel Gehenim. Rav Nehemiah comes along and says, no, 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 no. This is actually the biggest curse in the world. The biggest curse in the world. Because I'm not talking about aloneness, but rather I'm talking about loneliness. And so that perhaps is what the Medrash is teaching us, the two opinions of Nehemiah and Rav Yehuda. What's this choshech? What's this? They were isolated in their homes. Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? Depends. If it's loneliness, it's the biggest curse. If it's aloneness, it's the biggest bracha. Our job is to spend more time with ourselves alone, to get to know each other, ourselves, to introspect, to connect with our Creator. But our job is to also make sure that no one ever feels lonely, that no one ever feels that lost, that sense of confusion that comes along with it, that no one ever feels that sense of isolation. So whether it's Shalmala or whether it's Shel Gehenim is really, by and large, up to us. Again, a beautiful idea based on the Medrash. So idea number one we saw was this beautiful idea of the dogs, that the dogs represent and reflect how we should experience this world. In the same way, they realized that it was Hashem who was in charge, and therefore they didn't get agitated, so too, even when we go through change, and even when things are out of the ordinary, and even though there's chaos all around us, we should be a little bit more like the dogs, to recognize that Hashem is in charge, and when Hashem is in charge, we don't get agitated. When Hashem is in charge, we don't start flailing and barking and going crazy, but rather we have this sense of serenity, and this tranquility, and this peacefulness which overcomes us because we recognize that ultimately Hashem is in charge. Idea number two came from the Medrash, the difference between loneliness and aloneness. Meheichan haya choshech, where did this choshech come from? One opinion says that it was the choshech shel Gehenim, that it was loneliness, it was the biggest curse, it was the biggest plague, and you and I have all know times in our lives and times in friends of our lives who have experienced that choshech shel Gehenim, that sense of loneliness. On the other hand, we also know that there's something called alone. There's a blessing of being alone, of being to do es bodedus, to connect with the Ribono shel Olam, to be able to connect with yourself. That is the Mechoshech Shalmala, a beautiful interpretation of the two opinions of the Medrash. Idea number three comes from Moshe Sternbach. Moshe Sternbach, one of my favorite interactions in really the entire Parsha here, is the interaction between Moshe and Paro at the beginning of the Parsha. Boel Paro, come to Paro, send us out. Right? When are you going to persecute us until it's time to go? Vayomru avdei Paro, a love. The servants of Paro says to him, how long are you going to stick with this? Right? Ad matayya zelanu lemokesh shalach es ha'anashim ve'yavdu es Adonai Elohim. Send out the anashim, send out the men, and let them serve their God. Vayushav es Moshe ves Aaron el Paro. So Moshe and Aaron are brought back to Paro, and Paro says, Vayomer aleihem, lechu yivdu es Hashem Elokeichem. Miva mihochim, who's going? Vayomer Moshe, Moshe says, Benarenu uvizkenenu neleich, that we're going to go, old and young, bivanenu, vimnosenu, bitzonenu, vikorenu, young, old, male, female, flocks, herds, everyone's going. What is going on here? So to me, this is one of the greatest exchanges in the entire Torah. First of all, you'll notice that when the Avdei Paro come to him, they say, Shalach es anashim, send the men. When Moshe reports back who's going, he says, men, women, young, old. What's going on there? So perhaps there's a description of religion. In other words, in Egyptian culture, it was only the men who were able to serve God. It was only the men who were able to have a relationship with Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu comes back and says, Judaism is different. Judaism is by definition democratic in our relationship with Hashem. We might manifest it differently, right? Men and women might experience that relationship a little bit differently. But the commonality is you can be a male, you could be a female, you could be young, you could be old, it doesn't matter. All of us can have a relationship with Hashem. And so the Avdei Paro says, Shalach es anashim, send the men, because only men can experience that relationship with Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu comes back and says, no. Ben Arenu, Vivno, Vizkenenu, Vivanenu, Vivnosenu, everyone, young, old, male, female, everyone can have that relationship with Hashem. In and of itself, that's a beautiful idea. In and of itself, there's an enormous Musar Haskil for us there. Sometimes we fail to appreciate just how democratic our relationship with Hashem is, that it doesn't matter if you're a Kohen, Levi, Yisrael, any Jew at any time, in any place can have that relationship with Hashem. Let's never for a second take that for granted. But says Rav Sternbach, there's something even more profound taking place in this interchange. Paro says to Moshe, Lechu yivdu es Hashem Elokeichem, go serve God. But miva mihochim, what Paro is really saying is, who in your right mind is going to go? Right? Who in their right mind is going to want this thing called Judaism? Do you know how many restrictions your God's going to place on you? Do you know, davening three times a day, getting up early in the morning, the obligations to learn, you can't eat, you can't just go on. Think about what our vacations would look like if we didn't have to worry about food. If we can go to any McDonald's or Wendy's and just eat. Think about how many hours of planning that go in just before any vacation to figure out the food alone. Paro says, Miva mihochim. Who in their right mind is going to want to go with you? God's crazy. He's going to give you 613 commandments, obligations, restrictions. You can't go out Friday night. You can't. This is insane. Mi va mi hochim. Who's going to want to do it? So what does Moshe Rabbeinu answer back? Such a profound insight. Vayomer Moshe. Moshe says, you want to know who's going to go? Bin arenu vizkenenu nelech. Everyone. Everyone's going to want to go. Why? Ki chag Adonai lanu. Because what you view as oppressive restrictions is for us, ki chag. For us, it is joyous. For us, it is a celebration. For us, it is the greatest privilege in the world. Aval Paro, says Rav Moshe Sternbach, lo hevin she'asimcha gam hi avodas Hashem. Paro didn't understand that in serving God, one can feel joy and one can feel happiness. V'savar she'avoda haynu bezvicha v'shayeches rak b'gvarim. Paro assumed that it was only for men and that it was only about sacrifice, that it was only about giving up, that it was only about the restrictions. And so Paro says, mi vami hochim, who in their right mind is going to want a part of this? You think everyone's going to run to serve God? Mi vami hochim. Moshe Rabbeinu answers back and says, no, ki chag Hashem lanu. That Judaism for us, as R' Moshe Sternbach says, chag la Hashem haynu simcha begeder nagila v'nismecha bach, shein ba'am Yisrael simchas holus, ela simchas avodas yotzer hakol. When we talk about simcha, it's not just like, oh, let's go party. No, it's a simcha in the recognition that we are serving Hashem. We sometimes lose sight of this. Sometimes Judaism is hard. Not going to lie. There are some times when it would be a lot easier to have no restrictions and to have no commandments and to be able to get up on a Shabbos morning and to go to the gym and do whatever you want and act however you want and dress however you want. And right, would life sometimes be easier that way? 100%. But we have to remind ourselves over and over again. And what we have to indoctrinate our children with is that Judaism isn't just a list of do's and don'ts and oppressive restrictions, but it's kichag, that it is like Moshe responds, kichag Hashem lanu, that everyone's going to want to be a part of it. Because what are we going to focus on? The joyousness of it, the simcha of it, the happiness that comes along with our service of Hashem. Is it sometimes restrictive? Yes. But it also gives us such incredible meaning. As Rav Pinchas has said, and we've quoted before, Rav Pinchas says, simcha is not a prerequisite to Judaism. Simcha is a symbolic of your Judaism. Same way if I was walking down the street and I had, right, this week someone won the $550 million lottery. If I had that winning lottery ticket in my pocket and I'm walking down the street and I'm schlumping and sulking and, right? So you know that I have no clue that I just won the lottery. But if I'm walking down the street and I'm like bipping and bopping, so what do you know? You know it's because this guy just won the lottery. Says Rav Pinchas, we have to feel in our Judaism like we won the lottery. We have to walk around with that simcha, kichag Hashem lanu, recognizing that we have won the lottery every time we wake up and every time we get to serve the Ribono Shel Olam. Because I got news for you. Like everyone else that's ever come before us, we're here for a finite period of time. And it's what we do with that. And it's the mark that we make. And it's committing ourselves to the eternality of Judaism, of a life of Torah and mitzvos and chesed that's going to long outlast us. That's the greatest simcha. It gives our life meaning and purpose and context. It anchors us. Judaism is not just like Paro, mi va mi hochim, who in their right mind is going to want this. But Judaism is kichag Hashem lanu. So we saw three beautiful ideas in 30 minutes. Idea number one was the notion of the dogs. We should learn a little bit more from the dogs. We should recognize that it's Hashem who is in charge, and it's because Hashem who is in charge, we shouldn't allow ourselves to get agitated. We shouldn't allow ourselves to get thrown off by the chaos, but rather like the dogs, to not bark and to accept it with that serenity, recognizing that Hashem is in control. I want to thank again our sponsors. Before I do ideas two and three, in memory of Teddy Kellen, sponsored by Al Gordon, in memory of his father, Baruch Ben Chaim, and Uncle Baruch Yehuda Ben Shmuel, we appreciate it very much, and by Nadine and Jody Rosenblatt, Psuros Tovos, good health for Judy Cutler, Yehudis Esther Basrezel. Again, we appreciate your sponsorship very much. Idea number two was the idea of Choshech. Where does Choshech come from? Is it Choshech Shalmala, or is it Choshech Shalgehenim? Is it loneliness, or is it aloneness? The difference between the two of them, again, an idea that can be developed for much longer. And idea number three, such a beautiful insider, Moshe Sternbach. What a great conversation between Paro and Moshe. Paro says, I'll let you go. But mi va mi hochim, you think everyone's going to run after you? Who's going to want to join you? This Judaism thing is crazy. The rules, the restrictions, the obligations, the pressure. Who wants that? Moshe says, you're missing it, Paro. Everyone's going to want it. Binarenu, Vizkeinenu, Bivanenu, Vivnosenu. Everyone's coming. Why? Because you're focused on the wrong part. For us, it's Kichag Hashem Lanu. Focus this Shabbos on Judaism, not just being the do's and the don'ts, but your Judaism being a chag, being a joyousness. Whether it's the Divrei Torah at your Shabbos table, whether it's the singing of the Zemiros at your Shabbos table, whether it's the meals you enjoy, whatever it is that gives you that geschmack, a l'chaim, a herring, whatever it is, a babka, I don't know, whatever does it for you. Basically, I just told you what makes my Shabbos, the herring, the babka, and the l'chaims, right? But whatever it is, it's going to create that. Recognize that Judaism was meant to be celebrated. It's not just a list of burdens and obligations. That I wish everyone a beautiful, a warm, you should feel the warmth of the heat in your homes. You should feel the warmth if you live in Florida from the weather outside. And if none of those work, then you should feel the warmth of the Torah that we shared this morning. But I wish everyone a beautiful, a meaningful, an inspirational Shabbos. Same time, Emir Tashem, next week, 9:30 a.m., 3 Ideas in 30 Minutes.